appreciate and enjoy being able to meet old friends and new friends and inflict some things upon them. I want to talk about some ideas. The talk is essentially two parts. One, I will go on reviewing some things about KMS states and some C-star algebras and trying to force you to see it in a certain way. And then the second part of the talk, I'll try to give you a very brief, very quick introduction to a C-star dynamical system introduced by Conor Marcoli and what the equilibrium states are in that case. But let me begin by saying that you should not be surprised that symmetries and equilibrium are related. In fact, they're related in a very deep way. Just think of sometimes how you are still standing just because you don't know which way to fall. That's an example of this deep connection. So I will try to give you a slightly more sophisticated version of exactly the same thing. Here's an outline of the talk. Equilibrium would mean, for the C-standard dynamical system, would mean KMS equilibrium states. So I'll introduce them. You will fall asleep, probably, most of you anyway. Then I'll show you some examples and computations. They won't be enough to wake you up because you will have seen them, except I will maybe try to give you a different slant on those computations. I will try to then explain this slant by talking about cross products and gauge symmetries. And in that context, I will discuss invariance of equilibrium, that is to say, time invariance, something that is in equilibrium, stays in equilibrium, versus the stability. If something is in equilibrium and you perturb it, it goes back to equilibrium. And I will show you how, through more examples and computations, how this stability is what's really forcing very strong symmetries into the equilibrium state. Then I will talk about there's a 5.5, let's say, and we'll talk about the Kohn-Marcoli C-star dynamical system. I guess you can't see this. So there'll be a 5.5 there on the Kohn-Marcoli dynamical system, and then, if time permits, I will allow myself some speculations. So, as you all know, A is a C-star algebra, and sigma will represent a continuous one-parameter group of automorphisms. That's called the dynamics on A. And the KMS equilibrium condition is just a strange condition, and it says that a state phi on A is a KMS beta state for a certain beta, which I would choose positive here, but it doesn't have to be. If for all elements in the algebra there's a continuous function on the in the closed strip on the complex plane, which is holomorphic on the inside, such that there is an interpolation between the f sub ab at t, it represents phi of a sigma t of b, and f sub ab of t plus I beta, that is on the horizontal line at height beta, it's the product reversed. It's like a trace-like condition. Now, so this function interpolates between those two. So that's the original definition, and I'll put it up. I won't use it because, fortunately, there is a better equivalent formulation, and it has to do with analytic elements. The fact is that there is a dense star subalgebra, curly A, of the original C-star algebra called analytic elements. And if you have an analytic element, then the function that goes from Z to sigma as Z of A makes sense. There's an entire function, entire analytic extension of T from the reals to all of the complex numbers. And KMS condition is equivalent to saying that the state satisfies this trace-like condition where phi of AB for analytic elements A and B is equal to phi of B times sigma I beta of A for all analytic AB. So the fact is that it's easy to prove, it doesn't require the algebra to be unital, but it's easier to prove it is unital, that if you compute phi of sigma TA and multiply that by 1 to make your B equals 1, it would be the same as phi of 1 times sigma T plus I beta of A. And that implies that the holomorphic function, the entire function, is periodic and bounded. So it has to be constant. And that gives you invariance under time. constant for all complex numbers, it means it's constant for the real line. That gives you the KMS condition implies invariance. So here are some examples. If you take your sister algebra to be the triplet sister algebra, which by presentation is a sister algebra generated by an isometry, and by representation is a sister algebra with a shift, then it's a fact that the sister algebra is just a closed linear span of the product of the form S to the M times S star to the N, where M and N are integers, positive integers. And from that you define a periodic dynamics by simply multiplying the isometry S by e to the it, and of course the powers of S by the powers of e to the it. That gives you, on the generating monomials, it gives you sigma t of Sm, S star to the N, is e to the it times the difference, M minus N, Sm, S star to the N. So these Sms, S star to the Ns are all eigenvectors for the dynamics, the eigenvalue being the complex number of modulus 1 there. Now, if you want to compute the KMS state, you can use this characterization here, because the dynamics is so simple on the monomial. And you can actually play around with this product, C of S M, S star to the N, and then you flip over the M power to the right. I don't know if you get to see this green arrows. Let's jump over here. And jumping over here picks up a factor of E to the minus beta M. And if you now make the N star to jump over, picks up a factor of E to the minus beta M. So as a result, you end up with the same thing as you started, which picked up a factor of E to the minus beta M minus N. And that results in the following. Phi of S to the M, S star to the N has to be, well, this number if M is equal to N. Well, because if M is equal to N, at some point you have the identity in there. And if M is not N, then you have to get 0, because this factor here is not 1. So the KMS states are supported on the even product. And this even product, they generate a sister algebra, which is commutative. This is simply the sister algebra of this even product, commuting projections. They generate the continuous functions on the one-point compactification of the integer. So now you have a state here that satisfies a certain condition. That's a probability on the compactification of the integers. And the condition here resolves itself, and it tells you that you have to put p sub n equal to this number as point minus on each and add them up. So the KMS state is only one, and it comes from this measure on the integers. If beta is finite, if beta is infinite, you have to put zero everywhere except at infinity you put the whole mass. So the moral is that KMS states comes from measures in this case. Let me give you another example in which I was involved. Actually, this is something I started by many years ago. Not here, but at the Fields Institute, when it wasn't here. Because I was very inspired by a talk by Alan Kohn on the Bose-Kohn sister algebra and equilibrium phase transition. So, if you take the sister algebra generated by elements mu n and theta r, where the mu n's are a semigroup of isometries, and now this semigroup of isometries is based on the multiplicative integers. And the other elements, theta, they are, well, if you think of it, these three conditions here tell you that it's a representation of the group Q modulo Z. So you take the rational points in the circle, that group. It's represented in the theta. So there's a copy of the Toeplitz algebra of the semigroup n cross, and there's a copy of the group sister algebra of Q modulo Z, and the way they're glued together is through a covariance condition, this condition here that says if you conjugate a theta by a mu, you get a sum of theta, very, very much like what Rui was talking about before. This is in fact one of the motivations, I think. So this sister algebra presented like this is a Bose-Kohn sister algebra. It can be given a representation on the left coset space of certain certain group inclusion I won't discuss. But on that, there is a natural dynamics to consider. Caesar alpha is generated by these monomials. And if you take a monomial like this, or you multiply a mu m, say r, mu n star, and you look at this m and this n, take the quotient, raise to the it, leave the monomial the same, so the monomial is an eigenvector for the dynamics, but it turns with the speed m over n to the it. If you do that, and that's natural, I don't explain now why, but it's natural if you're considering the group inclusion of certain affine groups. That's a natural dynamics, and if you ask what are the KMS states, then you can write them down. And the way you write them down is playing the same trick. You write the monomial, you flip over, pick up a factor m to the minus beta, and now you go with both over, you pick up a factor of n to the minus, 1 over n to the minus beta. At the end, you have the same thing you started, but you picked up a non-trivial factor. So as a result, there is a condition when the m is equal to n of rescaling, and there is another condition of 0 when m is not n, because this is equal to that, and you have to account for this, which is not 1. So again, what we see is that the KMS condition implies that KMS states come from measures. If you don't see this, you don't necessarily have to see this as a measure, but the C star algebra of Q modulo the integers is commutative, so it is continuous functions on some space, is the dual of Q modulo the integers, and on that space there is a measure that corresponds to this, or there may be many measures that corresponds that satisfy this condition, this rescaling condition. So again, that's a overly simplified version of it. Here's another simpler version. But let me point out that in this example here, it hasn't gotten really interesting as far as what I want to explain, because in this example, there is a structure. The C-star algebra has a certain structure, and of cross product, and the dynamics as a group of automorphisms, you know, it's very thin. It's just a line, but it is dense on something. So when you see this condition here, you could have guessed it already, because when I told you that this was the dynamics, in order to be invariant, a KMS state has to be trivial on the uneven monomial. Just from invariance and the fact that the rationals are dense in the reals, you get that KMS states have to be, just from invariance, KMS states have to be, have to factor through this zero here. So uneven monomials have to get zero KMS value. Here is a new example. I mean, here is a, for the talk, it's a new example, it's a very old example. But it will have something interesting to show. It's very basic. It just takes a triplet algebra of two copies of the integers generated by two isometries, which commute and star commute. This is star commuting in the classical sense, where the isometries commute and they commute with each other adjoints. For example, you can represent them as two shifts, one in the first coordinate and the second coordinate, and L2 of n cross n. And a little computation gives you that the C star algebra is generated by the monomials, or spanned by the monomials, where you can put all the S's on one side, all the T's on one side, and separate the adjoints to the right and the non-adjoints to the left. So this is some sort of weak ordering of your monomials, and that generates the whole C star algebra. And on that you put a periodic dynamics, because you cannot choose S from T, so you give them the same speed of turning. You don't have to, but let's say that you do. And then the dynamics on the monomial just picks up the S, M, and TR. They go forward. And the S star N and T star S, they go backwards. So you see the balance. So you see M minus N plus R minus S times IT. So that's the dynamic. Now, if you think of this, if you think of invariance, the KMS state will have to vanish when this is not zero. But if you really want to do the KMS condition the way we were trying before, you start flipping them over, and you send the S and then the N, and then the T, and then the TR and TS. You start picking up things. But before you do it, stop in the middle. These two things commute. So you make them commute. Right? Because it's a start commuting isometry. You can commute them at any time. So you make this one go past this. This two go past this two. And you get up to the same thing you had, and you picked up this factor. Now, there's no R and no S here. So this is telling you that you have a stronger condition for KMS states. And the stronger condition is that if M is equal to N and R is equal to S, then the KMS value for this monomial is this. And if one of them fails, that M is not N or R is not S, then you get zero. Now that's more than invariance. Invariance will only give you the condition on the vanishing of this expression. KMS gives you on two separate identities there. So this is stability showing its face. That is telling you that things are more symmetric than you would think them. Now let me make an aside comment here. You can think of it, it's not the way it's proved. The way it's proved is there. But you can think of them as this. These two numbers, they weren't really the same. They were just very close to each other, but they weren't the same. In fact, they were rationally independent. So as soon as you have that, the action is not an action of the circle anymore, it's an action of the two torus. Because once you close the dynamics, it spreads onto the two torus. And now you understand why. If you perturb this a little bit by making these two numbers a little bit different, then you see why the symmetries are stronger than the circle, and they are correspond to the two torus. It's because the circle is a fluke. It's wrapped around the two torus in a way which, if you perturb slightly, gives you a dense orbit. So, okay, so now you're satisfied that things are okay. It's nothing weird. It's going to get better than that. So here's the computation. So here's the actual computation of the KMS state for the triplet algebra of n squared. You get KMS states, and here are the measures. And the zeros come from invariance. This is what I said already. Here, invariance. Oh, this slide just repeats what I just said. So, move on. So, okay. So, let me give you a crash introduction to cross torus by semigroups, which explains some of these things and will help you see them. Except that Rui already did something more complicated already, so this should be easy. You can express the sister algebra of the shift. This is the triplet algebra as a cross product of continuous functions on the compactified integers times the integers. And there's a canonical dual action, which is a dual of the group generated by the acting semigroup. So the acting semigroup generates a group, and then that group has a dual. It acts on the cross product. And if you take the averages around the circle, and you get this conditional expectation onto the continuous functions. This is what we were talking about in a very concrete example. And then what the theorem I just showed you proves, is, among other things, is the KMS state factor through this conditional expectation. And the same thing happens for the boson. This was observed by myself and Rayburn and Bernd Brenken. There's a canonical dual action of this is an infinite torus. I mean, if you take Q star plus, it's a positive rational, so you factorize, you do prime factorization, you see that that's a direct sum of infinite many copies of the integers, and the dual of that is the direct product of infinitely many copies of the circle. What I was saying is that since the primes are, I should say the logs of the primes are rationally independent, the closure of the dynamics is the whole thing. So the dynamics is wrapped onto this dual group densely. So you don't see any problem in having that your KMS states will factor through the conditional expectation. This happens by invariance. So in the Boscon and in the Toeplitz algebra, this factorization through the conditional expectation is expected only from invariants. In the case of a Toeplitz algebra of two generated by two operators, two star commuting isometries, and there's a canonical dual action of T squared, sigma r is a diagonal, and then you have the situation with conditional expectations where sigma invariants bring you down to here, but that's only halfway. Stability somehow manages to get you down all the way to the continuous functions on the compactification of the two of the n squared. This is not the 1 point compactification. This is the product of the 1 point compactifications of each factor. So anyway, think of this as a perturbation, and it may even be possible to prove it that way. But this is not something I've been able to do. Maybe a reason why. There's another example I have to skip because of time, but I'll just mention it here. There is a construction similar to the Boscon construction that works for number fields, and Mahil von Frankenhuysen and I have studied the equilibrium state, and again they factor through a conditional expectation. In the case of the number field, it is already interesting because the dynamics in the number field case does not depend on the algebraic integers themselves, but on the norm. That's some sort of measure of the algebraic integer. And two different algebraic integers can have the same norm. So you think, well, maybe invariance, time invariance will imply that the monomials with two algebraic integers of different norm will have to vanish in the KMS state, but not necessarily if two integers have the same norm. But it is true. The KMS state factors through the whole conditional expectation in a similar situation to this, which I won't draw you the picture, but there is a gap here due to the fact that algebraic integers can have the same norm, that even then it goes through. So I'll skip that because I want to talk about something else. Things get more interesting if you look at the Toeplitz-Kunz algebra. And again, by presentation, it is generated by n isometries with orthogonal ranges. You can have representations on Fock space. I'm talking about the Toeplitz-Kunz algebra, so it has a faithful representation on Fock space, which you can think of as a L2 of finite path based on n symbols. So where path is just a sequence of letters, all transitions are allowed because there's no restriction here. And the isometry is defined by simply left entering or left multiplication by the symbol. So if Fj delta of a path is delta of the path in which you adjoin j on the left of mu, so it's left creation operator. So again, by the commutation relations that define or by computations with these operators, you see that the Toeplitz-Kunz algebra spans by monomials of this form, where mu and ni are finite paths. So you get to weak order them, put all the isometries on one side and adjoint on the other side. And there you define the dynamics again, and you take all isometries to be equivalent to each other so you don't make any differences. You simply look at the length of the path mu, the length of the path nu, and turn the nu's positively and the nu's negatively. And again, the monomial itself is an eigenvalue, an eigenvector for the dynamics. You wonder what are the KMS states of that. And again, I remind you, I'm talking about the Toeplitz-Kunz Sister algebra. So there'd be more room for things to happen. The KMS state for that dynamics has to satisfy when you play the same game. You move over the mu, pick up a factor, and you end up with the same kind of condition that says that phi of S mu is nu star is either zero if the paths are not the same. Or I should say that if the paths are not the same, this expression here is zero. That's because of the orthogonality. So the expression under the green arrow there vanishes if the paths are not the same. This is very strong. And if the paths are the same, well, that's one, and you pick up simply the factor. And that tells you again that phi is determined by this condition that says that it factors through certain conditional expectation, and on the range of the conditional expectation, it satisfies a rescaling condition. Well, it's actually giving you the value there, so it's hard to see it as a rescaling condition because it's already computing. So the space in which the measure lives is a compactification of the path space. And the KMS state is a probability measure on this space omega. And I can tell you what the value is. The point delta or mu omega, the probability has to, well, this is a normalizing factor, and you put the corresponding rescale value. But then you realize it only makes sense for beta bigger than log n. And if beta is equal to log n, you get a boundary measure. I'll tell you in a second what that is. But this is impossible. You cannot solve this condition. This is not, does not correspond to the probability if beta is bigger, smaller than log n. And at the boundary value, that what happens is that the state drops down from the Toeplitz algebra to the actual Kunz algebra O(n), and that's why, in some sense, explains why for the Kunz algebra O(n) there is only one KMS state, and it happens exactly at beta equals to log n. But I want to focus on something slightly different, which is this zero here, that is telling you that of all the monomials that do not have matching mu and nu, they have to go to zero by the KMS state. And it was Andonica who first suggested, and Ian Rayburn and I sort of wrote down in a concrete form, the Toeplitz-Kunz algebra is a cross product of some functions in some spectrum by the free group on n generators. The free semigroup on n generators. And as such, it has a coaction of the free group on n generators. Such cross products always come with a coaction of the free group on n generators. Now, if you play the game of invariance, the KMS state will have to factor through the conditional expectation of the circle action, which is should be somewhere here. Maybe I passed it already. So they should drop down to the sister algebra generate span by the monomials that have equal length. So that's what invariance will get you, down to equal length. If you don't jiggle invariance the way I told you with two isometries, in the sense I say, well, those E's are not really E. One is a little bit more than E. The other one is a little bit less than E. So now you don't really have a circle, but once you put the E, you know, once you perturb the E's, they really wrap around densely on the n-torus. That kind of idea of perturbation will bring it down to the fixed-point algebra of the n-torus, which is the span of the monomials that have equal length when you account for each of the isometries separately. So it has the same number of j's. The mu has the same number of j's as the nu. It doesn't matter in which order they appear, but they have to have the same. But that's not enough. The KMS state factor all the way down, so the sister algebra spanned by the monomials which have exactly the same mu and nu. So this is continuous functions on path space. So these algebras are non-commutative. You get down here, you're on a commutative sister algebra. Now, so you cannot explain that as jiggling the exponents, and imagine that you're perturbing some sort of aperiodic perturbation. But something stronger is happening. And this, the KMS state have to really come from measures on omega. So they factor through something that goes from T O N down to here, and that's the conditional expectation of the coaction of the free group. So now we're talking about taking the real action, the sigma, and using, loosely speaking, stability, so that we shake it so that it becomes first the n torus. And then shake it some more, so So it becomes the coaction of the free group. So this is ludicrous, of course. I mean, you cannot shake a group, a commutative group, into making it a non-commutative group. But somehow the idea is that perturbation sees, the KMS state see that there's a deeper symmetry. There's a deeper symmetry than the circle. There's a deeper symmetry than the N torus. There's actually a symmetry of the free group on N generators, a coaction of the free group, and the KMS state wants to factor through them. So there are many other examples of such situations, and I will quit here with the examples. There's a work on Kunz-Krieger algebra by Enomoto Fujibata-Tani. There's work on Kunz-Krieger algebra for infinite matrices by Rui Exel and myself. There's work on bimodular algebras with quasi-free dynamics with Sergei Nesherier. By the way, this was inspired at least in part by some earlier work or made possible, in fact, by earlier work of Joachim Zacharias. And in the first case of Kunz-Krieger algebra, you get symmetry by the coaction of Fn. In the second case, you get symmetry by the coaction of F infinity. And, number eight there is, by modular algebra, have a circle action, and you can say it's a coaction of Z, but you'll be silly. So in general, the systems share the property that the dynamics come always from a coaction of R star viewed as the dual of R. And next I will give you a crash introduction to a construction of Korn and Marcoli that I want to talk about in detail, but so it's a Kolmogorov GL2 system, and what they take is a group G, which is GL2 plus of Q. This means positive determinant. The group gamma is all well known SL2Z. This means determinant 1. They look at a space X, which is the upper half plane by the matrices, 2x2 matrices over the adels. So this is the finite adels. This is the restricted product of the periodic numbers restricted to the periodic integers. You can take but it's not good to take the product of the periodics because they are not compact. So you restrict in this product all but finitely many components are in ZP. This product is over all primes. That's called the finite adels. It's a ring, because all these are rings, and you can form the matrices over them. And then G acts on X by acting here via linear fractional transformation, and here by left multiplication. So if you take G and multiply it tau M, you do A tau plus B over C tau plus D in GM. And that means GMP at every component, where G is A, B, C, D. So G is the matrix A, B, C, D. You just do a linear fractional transformation on the first component and multiply it pointwise the second component. So they do that. And in this action, gamma acts properly. It already acts properly on H, on the upper half plane, so it will act properly on X. And then you form a quotient, which we denote like this. It's a quotient of just the space G cross X by the action of gamma cross gamma, given by gamma 1, gamma 2, of g, I just write x, but remember x is a pair, tau m, and this will be gamma 1 g, gamma 2 inverse, and then gamma 2 x, where gamma 2 x is this action here. So what's happening is that it's balancing out gamma from the transformation groupoid G and X. So this is the first change that is introduced. I'll come back to this later. So it factors out the action of gamma. The problem is that gamma does not act freely. So you don't get a groupoid with this. Nevertheless, you define a convolution. So you consider for F1 and F2 in the continuous functions with compact support in gamma G, balanced by gamma times X, you let F1 and F2 convolve by saying that F1 plus F2 of GX is equal to the sum. I'll tell you over what in a second, but you do F1 of GH inverse HX, and then F2 of HX. Now the problem is what is the sum over? The sum is over H, but you don't sum over group elements, you sum over left coset. So you take a representative of each left coset, or maybe right coset, I should say. I don't know, each one of these. And add these things. It turns out that it's independent, the sum is independent. It's a finite sum and it's independent from the choice of right coset. And then you also define an involution. And with this, the C sub C of the quotient, C sub C of the quotient becomes star algebra. That is only saying that this is associative and distributive and it behaves well with respect to the involution. But that star algebra can be made into C star algebra. So you use orbit representations. So you take a point in X and you look at the orbit and define an operator on the Hilbert space of that orbit. But it's only on the right coset. This gives you a representation on L2 of the right coset. And if you take the supremum over all such representations, you get a C-star norm that defines the C-star algebra. So, you get a C-star norm by with the C-star norm is the reduced C-star algebra of this funny quotient. This is not quite yet the Kohn-Markowitz C-star algebra, but that one is coming soon. So this is the second modification. So there was a first modification here which involves getting rid of gamma. And there's a second modification here, is make your algebra unital. And to make it unital, of course it's not the same, this one is not unital, you look at a subset, a closed open subset of the adels. So inside this A here, inside here, there is a set Y which takes the integral adels, that is to say, the product of the set piece. And that's called Z hat. I'll write it again here. So let Y be H times the 2x2 matrices over this. In number theory, people write a hat, and I've conceded to do that. So this will confuse you if you think of this as the circle. This is not the circle. This is the product over all primes of the periodic integers. For some reason, that's the standard notation, and I've ended up adopting it. So that's a Clopen subset of X, and now you want to cut down to that. And you just do it by, there are two ways of doing it. You can restrict here to Y and modify your definition of the convolution so that it still makes sense. Or you can cut down by a projection. So because it so happens that this isn't the multiplier algebra of this sister algebra. So this projection makes sense as in the multiplier algebra of this sister algebra, and you cut down. So let me say 2, 1 sub y times c reduce of gamma g cross x. And I have to put another 1 sub y here. So this corner where you sandwich your original sister algebra by this projection corresponds to a Clopen subset, actually a compact open subset of Y. This is compact, so the matrices are compact. This gives you the Kolmogorov-Macaulay sister algebra. This is not exactly the way they introduced it. The way they introduced it is mimicking this construction, except they want to land back in Y, so you have to restrict here to those H's such as HX is in Y. So you can implement the unitization already at the level of the convolution without need to compute in the corner. We found this is work, but by now we're talking about work with Nadia Larsen and Sergei Nesvayev in Oslo. This is work that has recently appeared. Some of it is current work. Okay, so let me go back to the main story. So you can see that this space, the space where you take the subset of X, namely Y, instead of X. And we have this symbol to remind you that this is not going to be, this is further removed from a transformation group because G is not acting in Y anymore. So that's why this box is there to remind you that G is not acting in Y because G can send you outside Y. It's a partial action. But in any case, the definition is that the reduced sister algebra is the corner in the sister algebra of this quotient. Now, the dynamics, unfortunately, is easy to define. If you take a function and you affect it by the dynamics, it simply keeps the same value multiplied by the determinant of the group element acting. So that's the determinant dynamics. And like I said, this can also be described as a direct completion of a sort of groupoid-like. These are not groupoids, like I said at the beginning, because the action of gamma is not free. So when you factor it out, you destroy. When you try to do the composition law for the groupoid, they want to compose in many places because they want to compose in the gamma orbit. And this definition, however, makes sense anyway. So, okay, so there's a lemma that we have. it's not particularly hard to prove, there's a conditional expectation from this sort of non-unital C-star algebra to the commutative C-star algebra associated to the space X mod gamma, and the conditional expectation satisfies e to the f at x is simply f of ex for continuous functions of compact support, and it also works at the level of the corner. If you take the Kolmogorov algebra, there's a conditional expectation, and it lands you on the continuous functions on this space modulo gamma. And the proposition that we proved was that for every beta different from zero, this conditional expectation E, something missing here, gives you a one-to-one correspondence between measures on this space, well, on the big space, that are normalized so that on the small space they take measure one, and are rescaling in the sense that if you take a compact set in X and you apply G, the measure of that set is the determinant of G to the minus beta times mu Z. And that too, the punchline is not here, and Km S beta state. Km S beta state of the Kolmogorov system. So that's the one-to-one correspondence. And the point is that for beta different from 1, also different from 0 and 1, these measures satisfying this, they can be computed. And the reason they can be computed is that they are supported off the zero divisor. So in this ring here, this is a product. Well, maybe I should say it here. This is a product. The matrix is over a product or a product of matrices. At each place, at each prime, you can have the determinant zero. Well, the KMS states for beta different from 0 and 1 do not see those points that have determinant 0 at any prime. So they are supported on the set of matrices, on the set of points tau m, such that the determinant of m sub p is non-zero for all p. That set has full measure, and because that set is in the orbit of the invertible, because that set is obtainable as an orbit, then you can have a complete computation. So this is a theorem, partly is due to Kolmogorov, partly is Nadia Larsen and Sergei Nesvayev on mine. So let me first say that for beta negative or between zero, strictly between 0 and 1, there are no KMS beta states. And for beta bigger than 2, there is a one-to-one correspondence between KMS beta states and probability measures on this very small set. It's contained in here. It's a invertible matrices. This is all matrices over Z hat. Well, the KMS states are determined by their value of on the invertible matrices. And so take any probability measure on the invertible matrix. You can extend it in a unique way so that it satisfies the rescaling condition. So this determines a unique state. Once you know it on the invertibles, because it vanishes off the zero divisors, you can tell what it is on the whole space. And if you do that, you get all KMS states. In particular, the extreme KMS beta states will come from points here, that is to say orbits, gamma orbits, in ZL2. The measure on the H part is always the same. Okay, so that was maybe not in this exact formulation, but that was known to Connor Marcoli. And what Sergei Nadia and I were able to prove is that in the missing interval, this is a critical interval, for beta between 1 and 2, including 2 but not 1, there is a unique KMS beta state. And it arises from a measure. We can write it down. It's twice mu infinity times mu beta f, and here's what mu infinity is. Mu infinity is a unique GL2Q plus invariant measure on the upper half plane, normalized so that the fundamental domain gets measure 1. And mu beta f is a product of measures over the primes, where for each prime you take Haar measure, this is a bit delicate, you take Haar measure of GL2 of ZP, you normalize it with a funny factor, and then you slide every set z, you slide it by g until it meets GL2ZP, you cut it, you compute the measure of that, and then you rescale it by bringing it back where it came from. So you know what the measure is on GL2ZP. Now you move GL2ZP with this rescaling condition, and you can cover the whole space. And the reason you can cover the whole space is that your measure is supported on the non-zero divisors. If there were something supported on the zero divisors, that shifting is not going to capture it because you cannot multiply GL2ZP by an element G and get a non-zero divisor, a zero divisor. So those are off limits, but the measure does not live there. So we get full measure by doing this. So, okay, so that's the theorem. It's remarkably difficult to prove this uniqueness. It involves proving that certain action is ergodic, and this is by no means easy. We were lucky that we were able to use a result by a fairly recent result by Clausel, Ulmo, and O. But I cannot even begin to discuss that now. But let me give you a couple of remarks that will complement the picture here. For beta equals zero, the measure mu infinity gives a KMS zero state. You just put it on H and full measure on the zero point. So for the matrices, you only use the zero matrix, and that's a trace. And we believe it's the only one. We haven't been able to prove that. For beta equals one, there's something very interesting that we haven't completely explored. But you look at Haar measure on A2 cross A2, but think of them as matrices. So this is the AF, the two copies of the Adels, but think of them as fitting on the second column of a matrix. And you normalize it so that the integers, the you get measure one. Then if you do the same as before, that is to say two mu infinity times mu f, you get a KMS one state. That is to say, these are zero divisors everywhere, because they have zero first coordinate. If you put a measure on the zero divisors, or on this type of, you know, very specific kind, where the first column is zero, the second column is everything, if you put a measure there, you can generate a KMS one state using the rescaling condition. You can prove that it's KMS one. And now you can act on the right by a whole group on this state by right multiplication. And I guess that's changing this column to be all different one-dimensional subspaces. So still zero divisors at every point, but in different orientations. And they all came as one state. We conjecture that these are all. We haven't proved that either. We believe them to be all KMS states. So the states are supported on the zero divisors are all primes. Not just at one prime, but all primes. That is to say, the measure of the set of tau mu for which MP is not zero, but the determinant of MP is zero, is one. So that's the full measure. Okay. So what the moral is that KMS states, even in this very complicated system, they factor through a conditional expectation. They come from measures. The measures have to rescale in a certain way. It's a generalization of the Markov condition. But what about symmetries? That was the original idea, that the things are symmetric, right? What about symmetries? Well, we don't really know. We don't know. But it's somehow fascinating that this is going backwards now. Instead of having thought about the symmetries first and then use them to compute the KMS states, we're now in the situation where we have computed the KMS states. We saw them dropping to a space, to assist a commutative sister algebra, continuous functions in a space. We saw them dropping there. We computed them there. And now we're thinking, well, is that commutative algebra the fixed point algebra of some symmetry in some sense? So what are these KMS states symmetric with respect to? What are we observing here? We don't really understand the structure of the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra fully. So we cannot answer this question. There is certainly no torus or even free group coacting. There's nothing like that. But there has to be something of which this E is the conditional expectation. There has to be something. So we don't know what that is, but we're working on it. What we do know is that there is this guy here, SL2Z containing GL2Q. This is a Hecke pair. This is the original, the classical. This is Hecke's Hecke pair. That is to say, the double cosets of this subgroup are equal to, contain finitely many right cosets or finitely many left cosets. So this is the original Hecke pair. This is Sister algebra is commutative. But this reduced Hecke sister algebra, I shouldn't say reduced because it doesn't make any difference. But maybe I should say reduced. Is contained, yeah, I should say reduced. So it's contained in the multiplier algebra of the non-unit of sister algebra. Okay? And it also works at the level of the corner. That is to say, the semigroup, not quite the Hecke algebra for the group inclusion, but the Hecke algebra for the group included inside the semigroup. This Hecke algebra is contained in the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra. So this is a speculation, and I will finish after I make this speculation. We believe that this semigroup Hecke algebra is there because the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra is a cross product in some sense to be determined of the continuous functions on the upper half plane by an action of a Hecke pair. Not by an action of the group. We believe the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra is in some sense to be determined a cross product of the functions on the upper half plane, not by a group, not by a semigroup, but by a semigroup Hecke pair, which I have the semigroup Hecke pair. So it's not 2Z. And of course, I don't know what that means yet, although there is some work of Zanev, of Krum Zanev. He saw something like this and talked about it in 2004. But we don't think it's exactly the same type of definition of cross product by a Hecke pair, but it's certainly very much along the lines that he set out. So we believe this is somehow a cross product by a Hecke pair, of which is the first component is a semigroup. And we also believe that associated with such cross products by Hecke pairs, there comes a coaction of the Hecke algebra, yet to be defined, and that what we're seeing here is the fixed point algebra of that coaction. So somehow the study of equilibrium states of the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra is leading us to believe that the semigroup Hecke algebra generated by this pair has some sort of Hopf structure, and it can coact on the Kohn-Marcoli sister algebra as some sort of dual coaction on this cross product, which we don't have pinned down completely, but we sort of believe that this is going to work out. So this is the end of my speculations. We expect this to work. Thank you very much. Yes, but interesting. This is separate work with Ian Rayburn, and it was my second choice of topic to speak in this conference because it's not quite ready yet. But yes, we have a cross product, but for that one we have an actual cross product representation, and very interesting in the sense of cross product by a lattice. By a quasi-lattice semigroup. So it falls along the lines of research of Andu Nika and Raymond and myself on quasi-lattice order semigroups. Yeah, but we can do it. It's much cleaner than this, in the sense that for those, we know what the sister alters are, we know what the coactions are. This one, this at the end, this is, we can compute, but we haven't really seen the structure in this situation. In the case that you mentioned, yes, we have seen the structure, and it's very clear. But soon to come, not yet, not quite yet. That's what Zanev has suggested. Yes, he never wrote it down. So all I have are notes from his talk in Bonn in 2004. But he does have a construction which gives at least this one with the X, the non-unital one, as a cross product in the way that he defines of C. You have to make a little allowance here, I think, and I can't tell you all the details, but this means that it's D0 in one direction, but there's another growth condition in the other direction. So the separate growth condition, I think, so let me put a big question mark there, across the Hecke pair or the Hecke algebra. So he does have a construction like that.
Of the Lakanishvayev computation of PMF states, do you also have, in that generality, can you see this extra symmetry that you didn't expect at the beginning?
In that case, it's a bit different because the when you have a sister algebra generated by a bimodule or by a correspondence, then you can represent it in different ways. And I think that if you have a bimodule sister algebra, there's a circle action. Yes, of course. The extra symmetry comes down to, instead of having the KMS state drop down to the fixed-point algebra of the circle action, they drop down to the coefficient algebra of the bimodule, all the way down to the coefficients. So you see it in a very strong way. Because the coefficient algebra is, in some sense, very small. Yeah.